The following content is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, enjoy articles to help you improve your green thumb. And now, here's NCRS volunteer Cindy Fowler.
And we'll start with Dave's Garden e-newsletter. I cannot endure to waste anything as precious as autumn sunshine by staying in the house. So I spend almost all the daylight hours in the open air. Nathaniel Hawthorne said that. And the article, Winterizing Plants and Trees, by Paul Anguiano. After the harvest is in, as the trees lose their leaves and the grass stops growing, it is time to prepare for winter. Tuck your plants and trees in well for their long winter's rest, and they'll be stronger and better prepared for a beautiful spring. Early autumn preparation. As temperatures drop and trees start to change their colors, it's a good idea to cut back a bit on your watering. Bushes and trees especially slow their uptake of water and nutrients, and drier conditions help them harden off for the winter. Don't let everything dry out completely, though. They'll need at least some water in the ground through the winter. As the lawn slows its growth, you may space out the last few mowings a bit. This is a good time to attack perennial weeds before they die back and entrench themselves for spring. Manual removal is easiest at this time of year when the tops are large and easily spotted and grasped. Additionally, many broad-leaved weeds continue growing after the grass has slowed, making them stand out even more. I'm not a big fan of chemicals and poisons, but this would be a good time to spot spray weeds. Most herbicides require the plant actively growing in order to take up the poison, so do not wait until too late in the year. A good feeding for your lawn will provide nutrients it can use in the spring to get off to a good early start. If you are organically inclined, finely chopped leaves and other fine organic material can be spread on the lawn to be absorbed through the winter. Do not fertilize your other plants, though. Many bushes and trees can get the wrong signal when given nitrogen and react by putting out new growth, wasting valuable resources that should be stored away, and delaying their preparation for dormancy. Remember that trees pick up water and fertilizer all the way out to the drip line, below the far ends of their branches. This is also a good time to get your soil tested. Many amendments, such as lime for sweetening or sulfur for acidifying, require time in the soil to make a difference in soil pH and bioavailability of nutrients. Modifying your soil in the fall will give you better results in spring because amendments will have all winter to work on your soil. Later, after the trees have lost their leaves, but before the ground freezes, it is time for a good cleaning. Lawns should be cleared of debris and cut to a reasonably short length. Thatching can also help to remove dead material in the lawn and open up the root zone to allow it to breathe better. In parts of the country with heavy snowfall, it's important to remove materials that fungus can grow on under the snow. I like to wait as long as possible to clear out the gardens and allow the perennials to slip naturally into dormancy. California poppies and snapdragons continue blooming for me right through the first snowfalls. Others prefer to clean out the garden right away to clear away unsightly dead stems and trap debris that is built up. Whenever you clean out your beds, be sure to add some mulch over and around the perennials. Mulch, such as chopped leaves or fine bark, will replace some of this protection, both for your plants and the precious living soil in your beds. I mix in a bit of composted material as well, which filters down into the bed through winter and helps break down the mulch for use as a soil amendment in spring. In truth, this is the part of the year in which I use the most compost and mulch. Leaves are ideal for this, but chop them up in a shredder or run them over with the lawnmower to prevent them from packing down. The use of compost at this time is more controversial, but I get good results using a mixture of materials next to the ground and pure mulch above. Never use compost in place of mulch, though. It's much too heavy, and many of the nutrients you're trying to provide will wash away by spring if they have nothing organic to work on. Mulch on top of the soil helps prevent winter heave, the process of freezing and thawing, which can wrench plants and roots out of the ground. Organic material worked into the top couple inches around trees and bushes can go a long way toward managing winter moisture by improving drainage while retaining some water. This organic material will be further decomposed and worked over by bacteria, worms, and other inhabitants of the soil during winter and early spring, making it available to trees and plants. Avoid piling mulch directly up against tree trunks where it can trap pathogens against the tree. Grass, weeds, and other material which has piled up around tree trunks should be cleared out as well. In exposed locations and where strong winter sun and/or wide swings in temperature are common, it may be wise to wrap the trunks of tender saplings and smooth-bark trees to prevent damage. This is also the time to use dormant sprays on fruit trees and other trees susceptible to early spring insect infestation. Check with your county extension service for appropriate measures for your particular trees in your particular area. Such treatment should be targeted at a particular problem rather than used indiscriminately as a general preventative, which is rarely effective. Finally, many gardeners use this time to dig tender bulbs which may not be able to survive the coming winter. My climate, Zone 7, is warm enough to maintain most things in the ground if I add a good layer of mulch on top, removing it again in the spring. But I do dig some of the more sensitive tropicals in the fall. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to stop watching the poppies bloom and clean out that front perennial garden before my dear wife starts talking about filling it with red lava rock again. And now, from HGTV's Gardens e-newsletter, Top 10 Rules for Fall Gardening by Julie Martins Forney. Fall Rule Number 1, Focus on Color. The season sizzles with breathtaking beauty. While you're busy tackling garden chores, take time to absorb the scenery. If you're in the market for a new tree or shrub, check out ones at local garden centers, which often discount nursery stock after Labor Day. Many natives, like sassafras, bring fabulous fall color. Fall Rule Number 2, Deal with Leaves. While it is tempting to ignore leaves tumbling from trees, allowing them to pile up on a lawn can harm grass. A leaf vac makes quick work of dry leaves. Chopping them into smaller pieces perfect for composting or using as mulch on planting beds or an empty vegetable garden. Fall rule number 3. Start a compost pile. Fall is the perfect time to start a compost pile. Plenty of autumn leaves provide ample brown material, along with various annuals, tropicals, or perennial stems from your planting areas. You can buy a composter, although many container-based systems work best for small amounts of material. For larger yards and lots of leaves, make your own compost bin. You can find plenty of design ideas online. Fall rule number 4, clean up. Take time to clean all spent plant material in the vegetable garden. If your tomatoes look like they've had a blast of late blight, do not add them to the compost pile. Avoid adding any diseased plants to your compost pile unless you turn it regularly and know it heats up. If your pile sits and quietly decomposes, it is not hot enough to kill disease organisms. Bag diseased plants and put them out for trash pickup. Fall rule number 5. Look for bargains. Places like Big Box, Farm Supply, and department stores that carry seasonal garden items usually start marking them down by early fall. Scope out bargains on things you know you'll use, including gloves, watering wands, and hose reels. Seeds dated for the current year will still give good yields next planting season, and bagged soil, moisture granules, and slow-release fertilizer can easily be held until the following garden year. So stock up on these items while prices are good. Fall rule number 6, prevent pests. Fewer pests plague fall gardens, but it is important not to turn off your pest radar completely. By taking action now against critters like slugs, you'll reduce the ones laying eggs that can actually overwinter and hatch next spring. Cleaning up plant debris and sprouting weeds in veggie gardens can help eliminate slug food sources. Fall rule number 7, protect from frost. Lay in a supply of frost blanket material, a fabric spun from polyethylene fibers that can protect plants down to as low as 24 degrees Fahrenheit. In coldest regions, tucking salad greens and herbs beneath a frost blanket can extend the harvest into mid-November or later. For hanging baskets and containers, look for frost covers stitched to form a drawstring bag. These covers slip over plants relatively easily. Fall rule number 8, set your sights on spring. The spring flower show you love starts with fall planting. Tuck tulips, daffodils, giant alliums, and crocus into beds this fall for flowers next spring. The right time to plant is when nighttime temperatures hover in the 40s to 50s range. Cover bare soil after planting with a loose mulch of chopped leaves or a piece of chicken wire to deter digging squirrels. This is also the time to plant summer bulbs like Oriental or Asiatic lilies. Fall rule number 9, prep houseplants. Start moving houseplants in before fall rains or cold temps arrive. Spray insecticidal soap on plants a day or two before moving them indoors to kill pests and encourage mobile insects to skedaddle. Before hauling plants indoors, trim trailing or lush summer growth on plants that overwinter in more of a hibernating state. Fall rule number 10. Tackle planting. Fall is an excellent time to tuck plants into your landscape. Shrubs, trees, and perennials thrive with fall planting because cooler air means plants and soil lose less water. Do not forget to water new plants throughout winter if snow cover is scarce. Carry out buckets of water in coldest zones where hooking up a hose is impractical due to freezing temps. And from the Triangle Gardener magazine, Easy Edibles for Your Garden by Dr. Lisa Jenkins. Happy childhood memories of picking blueberries in my grandfather's garden have deterred me from adding them to my landscape. I remember their towering branches drooping heavy with fruit and discovering that nothing surpasses the taste of sun-warmed berries. Great memories, so why my hesitation? The blueberries of my youth were big, and it's not just a distorted memory because I was a little kid. The rabbit eye blueberry varieties that my family grew are big, sometimes topping 6 feet tall. But that's changing, and now I'm hooked. Plant breeders have been responding to changes in how we live by developing compact plants that are better suited to smaller spaces. Walk through any garden center and you'll see compact and dwarf offerings of many of your favorite plants. While sadly, many of these cultivars don't live up to the hype, I've discovered the Bushel and Berry collection of compact, self-pollinating berry plants exceed my expectations. Reed Hardgrove of McCorkle Nurseries explained why these plants are gaining traction with the market. He said, "More people are wanting their plants to pull double duty, not only to be aesthetically pleasing and give them beautiful fall color or nice shrub structure, but they also want plants that will provide food. These new varieties can be put into the landscape and give them what they're looking for. Fall is a great time to plant blueberries. Done right, you can look forward to enjoying some fruit next spring. Select a location that gets full sun. While blueberries can tolerate some shade, they won't produce as much fruit as they would in locations where they get 6 to 8 hours of direct sun. Piedmont soils are typically acidic, which matches blueberries' preference of a soil pH of 4.0 to 5.3. They are shallow-rooted and do best in soils with a lot of organic matter. If you have clay soil, be sure to amend it heavily with compost. Put down 2 to 3 inches of mulch around the plants, but keep the mulch 2 to 3 inches away from the base of the plant. This will help retain moisture, deter weeds, and keep the roots cooler when warm weather arrives. Blueberries are sensitive to drought and will not produce fruit if they are stressed. Be prepared to provide supplemental water during hot periods, and during the first 3 years, ensure they are receiving approximately 1 inch of water each week. Blueberries flower in early spring, and typically their berries are ready to harvest 2 months later. The race with the birds is on from that point. Some gardeners net their bushes to deter the birds. I planted bushel and berries peach sorbet and perpetua in the beds along my front walkway. Now I enjoy them every day as I come and go. In spring, their blooms were among the first to arrive, drawing in the local bees. During the summer, I would pick a handful of berries on my way out to collect the mail. Now the leaves are coming in red, adding depth and color to my garden. The compact size means I can tuck them into my planting scheme and secretly grow food in my front yard. Standing on my walk one day, I was chatting with a neighbor. Bending down, I grabbed a handful of berries and popped them into my mouth. Seeing the abject horror spreading across my neighbor's face, I offered some, and with a little encouragement, he tried them. My gardening superpowers were thus revealed. Here are some mulching materials from hay to Z. Be imaginative in collecting mulching materials. Buy if you must, or scavenge from friends or local industries. Try hay. A farmer might be delighted to unload spoiled bales. Straw. Leaves, shred or rotary mow first. Hulls or shells from cocoa beans, buckwheat, peanuts, rice, cottonseed, oats, or nuts. Grass clippings. Ask your neighbors or a lawn maintenance service to save them. Wood chips. Get them from a utility company pruning near overhead wires. They add nitrogen. Shredded bark, add nitrogen. Sawdust, add nitrogen. Seaweed, kelp, and eelgrass. Ground corn cobs and stalks, add nitrogen. Shredded sugar cane. Packing materials, Excelsior, shredded paper. Salt hay, coffee grounds, partly finished compost, pebbles, ground oyster shells, newspaper, peat moss, it cakes, it's really better dug into the soil, Spanish moss, tobacco stems, but keep them away from tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, and potatoes. A flower falls, even though we love it, and a weed grows, even though we do not love it. That was said by Dogen. Companion Planting for Beginners by Shannon McKee. Growing certain plants alongside one another can make a huge difference in your garden. Growing certain plants, there are a few things as satisfying as finally getting your garden started and seeing all the plants exactly where you want them to be. The excitement of the growing season to come is one of the very best parts of being a gardener. You may put a lot of thought into what you want to plant, where, based on factors like light and crop rotation, but another idea that you may want to consider is the concept of companion planting. What is companion planting? Companion planting is a simple concept that entails planting two or more varieties together in hopes that they will actually help each other grow. There are flowers, herbs, and vegetables out there that can reap a ton of benefits from being situated near other plants. Of course, you'll want to remember that companion planting does not work for every plant, and that there are some varieties that are best grown on their own. Benefits of companion planting. Companion planting has become extremely popular in recent years, and that's because there are quite a few different benefits to be reaped from it. Pest control is one of the biggest. Imagine putting a few particular plants in the ground and never having to deal with deer, rabbits, aphids, or moths again. Alternatively, you can use companion planting to attract beneficial insects to your garden. For instance, ladybugs and predatory wasps can be brought into your yard to protect your other plants from the pests that want to destroy your hard work. Alternatively, you can use companion planting to bring in insects that are beneficial for pollination purposes. Attracting bees and other pollinators to your vegetable garden by strategically planting a few flowers in it is a perfect way to do so. Your vegetables' flowers can probably attract pollinators on their own, but a little extra help is always a good idea. On top of all that, companion planting can also provide these little critters with homes to stay in while visiting your garden. This means they won't ever have to go far for shelter. Companion planting can also help you maximize your use of space in the garden, which means fitting more plants in the same amount of space. This concept, also called interplanting, is actually quite old, with one of its earliest forms being the Three Sisters technique, practiced by Native Americans. Some examples of maximizing space in this fashion include planting carrots underneath tomatoes and using the area under trees to plant herbs, garlic, and onions. Companion planting examples. Pairing a few easy-to-grow plants can be an excellent way to try your hand at companion planting. Marigolds can be great when planted around your major crops, mostly because they help keep away nematodes, which can harm your plant's roots. They do this by producing theophane, which itself is a natural nematode deterrent. Planting dill and tomatoes together is an excellent way to protect your tomatoes from tomato hornworms. This is because the sneaky little pests will always attack the dill, leaving your tomatoes completely unscathed. On top of that, dill can also be used to draw ladybugs to your garden.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Out in the Garden on the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast by visiting our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.